Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I will be the host for our presentation today. Today is Sunday, February 22nd, 2026. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, February 20th. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 23,227. That's 23227. For the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 23,228. That's 23228. This morning, A Vision for You presents Patience, Tolerance, Kindliness, and Love. Our presenter will have a bit of an emphasis on steps 4 through 9 on her ability to live life more centered on these this idea of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love, and her transformation. You know, many of us arrive to the rooms of OA desperately needing life-saving triage, you know, or and the big book tells us for those who suffer from alcoholism or our version of that as compulsive overeaters, we have a double whammy. We have there's two primary components that make it impossible to stop by our own willpower. First, we have an allergy of the body that biologically mandates that we consume more of the same after first ingesting the substance. And second, and perhaps even more insidious, we have a mental obsession. We have the strange mental twist, they called it, that will always steer us back as an untreated person. We're brought back to the substance, even when it's been down for a period of time, could be a long period of time. Now, if we can't stop once we've started due to the allergy of the body, and we can't stop from starting due to the mental obsession, then by its very definition, we are utterly powerless, powerless. So now what? In the face of this seemingly hopeless condition, you know, what are we going to do? And the text goes on to say on page 44 in We Agnostics, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, well, you're probably alcoholic. And if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So they found the answer. But, you know, how would one define what that looks like? Well, on page 27 in the big book, you'll find a clear-cut definition. The Swiss psychologist, Dr. Jung, he was working with Roland Hazard, and he called this a phenomenon. They couldn't really explain it. Phenomenon is something that exists in our world, but you can't explain. And he called it a vital spiritual experience. He said, here's what it appears like. It appears that people that are having this revolutionary transformation, they experience huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. So ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these people, well, they're suddenly cast to one side. We don't know exactly how that is, but they're cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. And so what the co-founders and pioneers of AA found quite miraculously, they uncovered that through the application of some simple steps, some actions that, you know, that we take, we can undergo precisely what Dr. Jung was suggesting. And when we did, not only would we no longer want the alcoholic substance, but we could be brought into congruence with a power greater than ourselves, kind of a relationship with that power of our own understanding. And the text describes it even better. It says the 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, can expel, drive out the obsession to drink, in our case, to eat. And we'll hear more about this in a moment, enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. That happens. And joining us this morning to share her journey and navigating through the steps is Toni Ann A. from New Jersey. I'm going to spell her first name, T-O-N-I-A-N-N, Toni Ann A. from New Jersey. She's committed to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. It's with much gratitude that we welcome Toni Ann to the line this morning. Good morning, Toni Ann.
Good morning, Larry, and good morning to everybody here. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Toni Ann A. I live in Montclair, New Jersey. I am a grateful member of Overeaters Anonymous since the year 2000, and I have been a member and listening actively to A Vision for You since 2015. So I just celebrated my 10th year anniversary of being a member of A Vision for You. I'm really happy to be here this morning, and I'm so happy to talk about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, the topic of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love through working the 12 steps of recovery. I chose this topic because I thought it was very timely for the time of year that it is. We just celebrated Valentine's Day, and we're going into the season of spring, of renewal, and also because I find that there's just a lot of stuff going on and outside worldly clamors that make it difficult sometimes for somebody to perhaps be patient, tolerant, kindliness, and loving. So let me just tell you that I came into program in October 2000. I didn't come in on a winning streak, that's for sure. I came in really defeated and confused. I was confused and just really hopeless. I'd been binging and purging, and I just couldn't get out of the cycle. I could not break free of what I was doing. I wanted so badly to stop. I wanted to have a normal relationship with food. I wanted to have a normal relationship with my body, but no matter what I tried, I was only digging myself deeper into a dirt hole. And so I came into program, I got physical recovery, I checked every box. At the time I didn't work a program that was based out of the big book. It was mostly working tools, going to meetings, and white-knuckling abstinence. And that abstinence lasted me until about 2013 or so, about 12, 13 years, during which time in abstinence, I was able to accomplish many things in my life. I came in, I had two small children under the age of 4. I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And during that stretch of time, I was able to go back to school and start a new career for myself with the help of abstinence. And for the first time in my life, I really learned that I could achieve a large goal by breaking it down into small pieces. And for me, those pieces at that time looked like one meal at a time, and sometimes, honestly, one bite at a time. And I remember my sponsor asking me if I was willing to go to any lengths to escape this, alcoholic disease, but in our case, the food. And I did. And I remember in the beginning, like, if maybe you're new, maybe it's your first week or first day or first month or even your first year. I remember getting abstinent was really difficult. There was times when I would have to maybe go to bed early. They say if the day is hard, make it a short day. And I can remember after dinner just going to bed because I couldn't imagine facing the entire night without eating. And that was okay because in the beginning, that was what I needed to do in order to get through. And I had to go to any lengths and do those things or, finish my dinner and get in the shower or something just to do something different so that I can get away from the table and get away from the food. I was miserable. I was really horrible. I will tell you just a little bit about my life. The thought of eating off of a tray in front of the TV all night was like a party for me. That was my great entertainment in my life. My whole life was unmanageable. I had had two children, as I mentioned. I couldn't get out of my maternity clothes after 2 years. I was still wearing maternity clothes without being pregnant because nothing I had fit. I was lonely. I was isolating. I was completely opinionated. I was angry, and I thought I was a victim. I had been surviving, not thriving. I was in my 30s, and I was not thriving in life at this point. And I was dragging along a family, and it was looking bleak. I could tell you that my outcome looked very bleak. So program, the beginning, it helped a lot. The 12 years of back-to-back abstinence really helped a lot. But what I failed to do was expand my spiritual life during that time. I basically was working step 1 and step 12. And that was it. And as you could imagine, without a foundation, that's step one and step 12, because I really didn't have a message of depth and weight, it fell apart after a while, you know, and I ended up having an experience with relapse that was absolutely horrifying. I mean, I know in the big book it says he fell off like a ski jump, and with the Olympics going on right now, you can imagine me doing the ski jump but not landing good, okay? I always landed in a disaster, and I had created one disaster after another for myself to the point where at the end of the relapse, I was in such bad condition spiritually and mentally that my body was rebelling physically. My back had gone out, and I literally could not lay flat. For months, the only relief I would get would be sneaking at night into my car and sleeping with the car seat, like kind of like backwards, you know, like into a reclining position as much as I could tolerate. And I would set my alarm for a couple of hours of sleep and then wake up before anybody caught me in the car because I was afraid that the cops were going to think that I was doing something I wasn't supposed to. I really wasn't. I just couldn't sleep unless I was in that position. And that was the only way I could get rest. So that is where my life had gone to, completely unmanageable. And so I knew I had to get back into program. I had stopped going to meetings for a while because I let all the outside things in my life, the end of my marriage, a new relationship, all these new things in my life took precedence over my recovery. And eventually it just was a bad scene. So I came back. And I went to a meeting, and I remember seeing this woman who was so passionate when she shared at the meeting that sometimes she even had tears in her eyes because of what this program had given her. And she actually scared me. But I thought to myself, that's the person I need to be my sponsor. So I was very intimidated, but I did ask this woman to take me through the big book. And she took me through the big book and introduced me to A Vision for You in a way, and I saw this program in a way with fresh eyes that I had never experienced before. And little by slowly, by continuing to do the work in steps 4 through 9, well, 1, 2, and 3 every day, but by continuing to do steps 4 through 9, I started to see massive changes in my life, massive changes. And it didn't necessarily come like everything wasn't always rosy and stuff. There was a lot of wreckage that I had to face. Scary things. Financial things, relationships, health things, things that I had been afraid of that I had to deal with one step at a time, one thing at a time. So I came in here with a complex set of problems, you know, that were compounding. And the answer was a complex answer that needed time in order for it to be worked out. My job was sticking to it, just sticking with it, and sustain momentum. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but how exactly did I do that? Well, I mean, I continued to take a self-appraisal. I continued to do an inventory every night by doing step 11, and then during the day, working step 10, whenever something cropped up, resentment, fear, harm, whenever those things cropped up, I would have to do a step 10. And I have to tell you that I was that person that was full of fear. I often describe myself as having Chicken Little syndrome. And by that, I mean I always thought the sky was falling. If you were old enough to understand the reference, I always thought the sky was falling, or that the other shoe was going to drop. I was very untrusting. I did not trust anybody or anything. I always expected that the worst was going to happen. And because I had always convinced myself that the worst was always going to happen, I lived in a constant state of anxiety with everything. I wanted so much. Well, I'll just tell you that I thought everybody else was, this is such a terrible thing. I think of it now. Oh, I thought everybody, when God was handing out heaven blessings in heaven, I was standing on the wrong line. That's the story I used to tell myself. I remember thinking to myself, like, I wish I had a shirt or a t-shirt that I could wear that said under construction because I felt like my outsides didn't match up with my insides. I really did. And I didn't think that I was worthy. You know, I didn't think that I was worthy. I lived with a lot of shame, shame about what I had done to myself, what I had done to my life. And I had a lot of blame with the shame. And the blame was mostly towards my family and towards God, towards my family and towards God, because I didn't think that I received my fair share of what everybody else appeared to have in abundance. So what is the remedy to that, you know? Well, the remedy was working the 12 steps continually over and over again with sustained momentum, taking the next right indicated action, one thing at a time, until I started to realize that I was actually going someplace. It's funny. I just want to share a story. You know, I'm a kayaker, and that's my hobby. It's one of the things that I do to spend some time with my creator and creation. I love just sitting in the water. Sometimes one of my favorite things in the summer is I go into salt water, and I'll go in the channels and beach myself on a sandbar and just sit there and watch the birds and the fish and all of the wildlife around me. And one day I was sitting there, and there were these snails in the water. They were all around me. And I was watching them making designs in the sand, and they were moving so slowly, it appeared. You know, a snail, I mean, it looks like it's barely moving, but it was making these beautiful designs in the sand underneath them. And then at one point, I remember I started talking with my person that I was with, my friend, and I got distracted a little bit. And even though those snails were moving so slowly, when I looked back, the snails were gone. Little by slowly, they had gone someplace else. And sometimes I think that these little small motions that I make in recovery don't matter, but they do matter. And I'm going to take it way back to the food, just where I started. You know, you may be sitting here today thinking to yourself that you have a large amount of weight to lose, and how is this ever going to happen in your life? And I could assure you that it's going to happen one meal at a time. And even if you could break that down further to one bite at a time. And those small decisions that you think don't really matter, by making those right decisions, they do matter. And eventually, little by slowly, just like those snails, those decisions will lead us someplace. It's up to us where they're going to lead us. And those decisions that we make are going to depend on where we go. So let me get into some of the meat and potatoes, so to speak, of what I'm talking about here. And after I did step four, the final part of step four, and I feel like this is not, I don't hear it enough in program how important it is to create a set of ideals for myself. When I work with my sponsees, after they've done all of the parts of the step four inventory, which is the resentment first, the fear inventory next, then the harm inventory, and then their sex harm inventory, I then create a set of ideals. In the big book, it's on, I believe it's page 69, it talks about a sex ideal. But I don't just create an ideal for sex. I do it for every relationship that I have in my life. What would I look like as the perfect court reporter? That's what I do for a living. You know, how would I show up as a perfect court reporter? How would I show up in my life as the perfect sister, as the perfect employer, as the perfect mother? And each of my children, I show up differently because each of my children are unique. So I have a relationship ideal for each of my children. For every role, as you can see what I'm getting to, for every role that I have in my life, I create an ideal for myself. And these ideals are not permanent. They oftentimes will they'll evolve and they'll change as the circumstances change. Sometimes I have to adjust my ideal for what circumstances that I'm dealing with. So let me just tell you what an ideal is. It's a principle to be aimed for. It is a principle to be aimed for. And it doesn't mean that I'm perfect every single time. It means that this is what I'm going to strive for. And when I fall short, of the ideal, that's when I have to do a self-appraisal and evaluation. So just a quick story. I'm a court stenographer. I went to school. It took me 4 years to learn the skill. I basically play the English language on a machine, like a musician, but where a musician knows what they're going to say, what they're going to play when they sit down with sheet paper, I sit down and have no idea what's going to come out of somebody's mouth. And so I need to have 97 to 100% accuracy in what I'm doing. And it was a really difficult proposition. It was probably the hardest, one of the hardest things. I'd say program is up there with the hardest thing, but one of the hardest things I've ever had to do with my life. And I would get defeated again and again. I would have speed tests in school. They would like give you a certain speed. Say it was like, you know, I had to get to 275 words a minute. And I would be tested on my proficiency at that speed and accuracy at that speed. And it was a self-defeating process. I don't know if anybody could relate to this, but I would take tests and sometimes I would fail by one or two words again and again and again. And it would be so frustrating. I can remember that literally for 2 years, I drove myself home every day. And this is while I was abstinent in program in the beginning, before I had relapse. I would drive myself home and cry every day because it was so difficult. But because I was in recovery and I was keeping a food journal and a journal every day, when I went to bed at night, I would write in my food journal every night, I'm grateful to be a court reporter. I'm grateful to be a court reporter. And then when I went to sleep, I would imagine myself, right before I went to sleep, the last thing after my step 11, I would imagine myself going up to a counter in a law firm with my card and saying, "Hi, I'm Tony Ann, I'm the court reporter for today." And then I would pick myself up and go back to school. But it wasn't just all wishing and wanting. There was some work involved in it. And the work involved meant that I had to analyze the mistakes that I was making and then make adjustments. This is the key. I had to make adjustments to those mistakes so that they weren't tripping me up with the other words I was trying to get. So that's pretty much very parallel to what this program of recovery does for me. It allows me an opportunity for self-evaluation so that I can adjust those shortcomings, or I'll call them mistakes, that I make along the way so that I don't get tripped up the next time I experience that circumstance. That is the most beautiful, loving thing that I could ever do for myself. It truly is. And so I do this on a regular basis every day. From the time I wake up, it's the first thing I think about. I wake up in the morning, I put on my sponsee hat. I with a phone call to my sponsor, and then I put on the sponsor hat. Well, first I put on my hat of connecting to my higher power before I do any of those things. And just so you know that my higher power, I'm going to talk about it in a few minutes, but I like to call my higher power my creator. It is not a personified God, but it oftentimes will use the word God just as a default. So if you don't care for that word God, or if you have certain feelings, if it gives you some type of a feeling about that word, I'm going to ask you to just have an open mind with me today and just allow me to use that word as a filler word for whatever it is that you choose to call this power that is greater than yourself. So I call it God or my creator. So the first thing I do is connect to my relationship with my higher power. And then I connect to my sponsor some days, but every day I do connect with my sponsees. And before I take that sponsee call, I do invite my creator to come in and show me the way of patience, kindliness, tolerance, and love. And then I, of course, I eat my weighed and measured breakfast.
Yeah.
I plan my weighed and measured food for the day. And then I go about whatever the next right thing is for me for the day. I do work for myself. I've been self-employed for, I guess it's almost 28 years. So, you know, I don't have a steady schedule. You know, I make my own schedule and it requires discipline. You know, I have a trial that I'm working on right now and it has to be done, you know, before I get an arbitration, before it has to go to the judge, before I go on vacation, which I'm leaving on Tuesday. And it requires discipline. It requires me, excuse me, sitting at my desk, getting the work done, whether I like it or not. And oftentimes that discipline from my program kind of goes to the discipline in my life and vice versa. You know, if I want this program to really work for me, it requires that I'm going to have to put in effort, and it requires that I'm going to have some discipline about it. And I just want to share that discipline is really comes from the root word, or the cycle comes from the root word discipline, which actually means to learn, to learn. And I love that today, that I get an opportunity to learn, because I'm still growing. You know, I'm a student. I'm a student in life. I'm a student in recovery. I'm a student of the big book and the big book literature. I often tell people that I'm inherently curious. And I think that's one of my strongest points, being inherently curious, because that makes me a seeker. And I really have to say that I would contribute some of the success that I've had in recovery with that constant state of seeking, seeking to grow, seeking to learn, seeking to expand my spiritual life, which, by the way, is probably the most important thing that I have in my life, is my spiritual life and that aspect of my life. So I talked a little bit about a relationship with my creator, but first let me define what the word relationship means, okay? I'm a huge, as I said, I'm a curious, I'm a seeker, so I do look things up and I do a lot of studying. A relationship is the way in which two or more concepts, objects, or people are connected, how they are connected, or the state of being connected. So I want to say this. How am I able to have a relationship, a connection to my higher power and to others, if I am not in relationship with myself? Think about that for a second. How can I have healthy relationships or be in connection and healthy connection with God and with others if I cannot first start with being in a relationship or in connection to myself? And I'm speaking specifically now about being in denial about what is going on in my life and what I am doing in relationship to myself. Now, denial may be a great way to avoid being in fear, but I have to tell you that denial is never going to fix fear, and denial is never going to change my life for the better. It may change it for the worse, but it is not going to make things better in my life until I am willing to look at and deal with those things in my life which are not serving me. They are not serving me. Most of us came into this program because what we were doing, our relationship with food, or I'll say for myself, I speak for myself, I came into this program because my relationship with food was not serving me. It was not serving me. And at the time, I did not even have the ability to be honest with what that relationship was. Step one helped me to see that I was powerless over what the food was doing to my body and to my life. I have a physical allergy to certain ingredients, and I have a mental obsession that keeps bringing me back to the ingredients that I am allergic to. And I had to understand that before I was able to understand what the solution, to simply use that word, what the solution was going to be for me. I had to understand. I was not doing myself any favors sitting in front of the television, sitting in front of the screen. Maybe today, at the time, there was no scrolling, but maybe you're the person that sits in front of, you know, has the phone in front of them scrolling. And by the way, scrolling the algorithm that I myself have created with my own brain. And that algorithm, if I'm the type of person like I came, you know, as I came in here, as I shared, right, that I came into this place lonely, isolated, opinionated, angry, and a victim, then that's the algorithm that I was feeding to myself. What am I feeding myself? Am I feeding myself all of this crazy, I call it the seething cauldron of debate that's going on inside my head and inside the world? And I perpetuate my own ideas by feeding that with my own algorithm of what I think. And for me, it was negative. It was those negative thoughts again and again playing in my head, telling me about how horrible I was and all these terrible things in my brain about myself, why I can't do it, why I'm a victim, why you'd understand if you had a bad life like me, why my family was like treated me like this, and why it was unfair, and blah, 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 all of these things in my head. And I was continuing, and not to mention, that's just what I was feeding my head. I was feeding my body the same type of garbage, the same garbage. And I was using that to just numb myself out because I could not deal with the enormity of the reality that I had created for myself with my own selfish, self-centered actions. Wow. God bless my sponsors those days that helped me. I had a sponsor once who helped me realize that I was addicted to chaos, that I created this chaos in my life because I had such a sophisticated defense system that I would create anything to distract me from having to deal with the actual problem of being uncomfortable because I didn't like to feel discomfort because of the way that I had lived my life had caused me wreckage. I had to be able to, so what I needed really was patience with myself, because this was not going to be a short process. As a matter of fact, the Big Book says that this process continues for our lifetime, that we continue to look for selfish, self-centered, I don't have the exact quote in front of me today, but fear, dishonesty and fear. And when those crop up, we address them at once. So just like the program that I did to become a court reporter by making those adjustments and learning that when I didn't get tripped up, it was easier for me to be in the moment. The same thing happens in this program by doing the step four and then continuing to clean up the past and the present as we go along by doing step 10. And I say clean up the past as we go along because oftentimes I've learned this. If it's hysterical, it's historical. If something is bothering me today, chances are if I have a very strong reaction to something, it's an unresolved issue that I haven't addressed in my past that keeps returning, and I'm seeing in other people that evokes such strong emotions within myself. Today, I don't really have those strong emotions like that anymore because I've been obviously doing this for 25 years. And so it's not to say that I don't have strong emotions. I do, but because I deal with them immediately and then I move forward little by slowly, they don't compound into bigger problems. So as an addict, I often like to say that I can swing both sides of the pendulum to the extremes, right? That's kind of like what the addict behavior is. It's taking a normal behavior to the extreme. You know, eating is a normal behavior, but the way I ate was extreme. And then, you know, purging was extreme. You know, I mean, I knew what I was doing was not normal, like in my subconscious. But I kept blocking it out in my conscious mind with distractions such as whatever, you know, screen time or getting in other people's business or trying to fix everything else in the world instead of just trying to fix me. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday where I was talking about, you know, I often hear described program as like trying to stay recovered is like walking up a down escalator. You know, I have to keep going forward. And if I stop, I'm going to slide back down on the stairs. Like, it's just, there's going to be no progress. And for me, I have to keep moving forward in my recovery and keep doing these self-evaluations, not to be like some great, you know, holier-than-thou person or anything like that, but I'm talking about just to be like normal, like to be neutral. That's what I have to do every day. And so, That is what I do every day, and it is actually one of the best things in my life. I have to tell you, it sounds really weird, but I'm in love with my life, and I'm going to get to more of that later on. So the first thing that I had to do was put the food down and stop putting garbage into my body. Put the food down. When I put the food down, something like amazing happened. I realized I had so much more time. Because I wasn't wasting time sitting in front of the TV eating and then spending all my time focusing on how I was now going to get out of the situation that I was in of being miserable. Because even though I was a bulimic and I was purging, I was still morbidly obese. I don't think I shared with that before, but I came into this program. I don't know my actual highest weight because I was afraid to go on the scale. Maybe some of you have that same issue as me. But I remember 234 pounds was a number I remember at the top number that I saw. But I know even from there I had gone up. And I've been also as low as 100 pounds down from there. My lowest weight was 133, and I'm 5'8". So I've been on both sides of that spectrum. Today, I am at a healthy weight as determined by my physician, my BMI, and my physician. I do wear, I'm not going to talk too much about it, but I am in a single-digit pant size. And I have a functioning body, which is a miracle, considering what I did to myself. I do have scars, so to speak. I'll call them scars. But I do have things in my body, damage that was done because of what I've done to my body, to my digestive system. Including my teeth and my gums. I have stretch marks all over my body. I have extra skin and everything that comes along with it today. And you know something? It doesn't matter. You know, this is just the house. My body is the house that my spirit lives in. And it is what it is. It is what it is. I've come to a point of acceptance with it. You know, sometimes I joke and stuff about it, but you know what? I'm actually okay with who I am and where I am today. My daughter is getting married. I'm very happy for her. She's, I have a wonderful future son-in-law who I love and adore. He embodies all of the traits that I just hoped for my daughter to meet somebody. He's loving, kind, conscientious, ambitious, a hard worker, and I feel very blessed to have this man in my life and in my daughter's life. He is a different culture than us. He is a Punjabi from Punjab, from India, and his family's religion is different than ours. And my daughter is getting married in a Sikh wedding, in a Punjabi wedding, which is going to require me, okay, you ready? Wait for it, to wear a two-piece gown with my midriff showing. Oh, it's like the world is just hilarious, right? But you know what? It's okay. If I had to put that gown on today, I would be okay. I mean, is my body going to be perfect? You know, am I going to tell you that I'm not going to feel like I have walls and, you know, extra skin and stuff? It doesn't really matter because that day is not going to be about me. It's going to be about a beautiful union with my daughter and not about how I look. Not about how I look. And I'm going to show up glowing, not because I look perfect with the perfect body, but because that glowing is going to come from within me, from a true sense of peace and happiness that I experience in my life today. And hopefully that I've been able to give to my children since I've been working in this program since they were, she was 4 years old and two, and my son was 2 years old. And he's also just moved back home. My son just moved back home after 10 years of being away. And I can't even tell you, I feel like sometimes I'm floating on a cloud to have my family all together again. You know, we do a lot of things together. We enjoy family dinners on a regular basis, which are very lively with laughter and fun and different than I used to be. You know, family dinners for me used to be like, you know, after everybody left, then the rest of the afternoon, the evening would be spent talking about everybody that was just there, criticizing all the things that I would do differently. And being judgmental. And I just don't live that judgmental life anymore today. I just don't. And it's such a freedom to be without judgment in my brain, to just be able to accept what is in front of me. And I really think that today it's a really an uphill battle to be that neutral person because it seems that we live in a world that is constantly in conflict and divided against each other. And I just, you know, even despite everything that's going on in the world, I have personal happiness and peace within myself because I choose not to engage in that type of behavior anymore because it's just not healthy for me. I don't put that into my body and I don't put that into my mind. Just like today, I choose foods on my program that are healthy for me, that are not ultra-processed foods, they're healthful and they support my goal of living a healthy, long life. And that's the same way that I put those foods into my body. I put those thoughts into my head with everything else that's going on around me. And that is not necessarily always easy. So how do I accomplish that? How do I accomplish that state of neutrality with food and with my life, with my emotions, and with circumstances? It's simply by doing the work of this program and working with others. So it says in the big book, right? We help others, clean house, you know, get abstinent, clean house, and help others. Get abstinent, clean house, and help others. And that's what I do. And I'm dedicated to it. It is my primary purpose to work on my recovery every day. And I have to say, like, for me, recovery is a full-time job. Like, I honestly do not have time for worrying about anything else because I need to focus all of my time on just going up that down escalator and focusing on how I can personally be at my best. And honestly, I feel like if I want to make the most impactful change in the world, I do it one person at a time by spreading joy. And how I spread joy is by filling up my tank first so that I have that to give to others. And I fill up that tank by having a relationship with a higher power, and I try to make it something tangible. So I specifically spend time each day seeking out joy. And joy doesn't have to be like, you know, somebody's going to jump out of a birthday cake for me. My birthday is on Wednesday. And that's not the kind of joy that I'm talking about. I'm talking about finding joy in the little, small things. Self-care. I'm going to talk about, let me start by going in order here and talk about patience. I've touched on this a little bit. This is going to be a long process. And oftentimes in the past, if something didn't yield immediate results, now, I know why I'm like this, because I'm an addict, and I want what I want, and I want it now. I don't want to be told that I have to wait and that there's a period of being uncomfortable while I have to wait. No, as an addict, I want to be like, okay, I make a commitment to be abstinent. I'm going to be abstinent for one day, and tomorrow I want to be completely different. I want to wear a smaller size. I want to feel comfortable in my skin. I want to be able to exercise comfortably and do all those things. But that's not what's going to happen because it took me years, my entire life to get to this point. It is not going to take me one day or a week to readjust this direction that I've been going in. It's going to be a little by slowly. But the good news about it is that I do find relief even by doing this for one day. And then I have to learn how to take that relief with the help of a qualified sponsor. And I use that word specifically, qualified, because there's a lot of people in. I have to make sure that I'm rooted in the big book. I work with a sponsor that has what I want, that's rooted in the big book, and I can see that this program is working in their life. I can see that this program is working in their life. And it doesn't matter if it's somebody that's been in the program for 25 years or somebody that's on fire in program for 3 months. Who've worked through the steps and is feeling the changes in their life, it doesn't matter the length of time because length of time does not necessarily equal up to a transformation or recovery, right? It could happen in 3 months. It could happen after 25 years. It could happen after 40 years. I hear people of all different times in recovery having that change happen. It happens when the sustained momentum gets enough speed and I just am willing, I open up. You know, I heard, I love this analogy. If a chicken lays an egg and I crack the egg from the outside, no life is going to come from it. But when the egg cracks from the inside, that's when the life emerges. It has to be an inside job. And I have to start with patience for myself, patience for my body. Health takes time to recover, but it doesn't mean that it can't recover. It takes continued right actions. Continued right choices, starting with the food, starting with movement. You know, no great things are ever achieved sitting in front of a TV eating, sitting in front of a screen scrolling. It has to happen from movement, from moving my body. I want to talk about tolerance. Tolerance is probably, out of all of the four things that I mentioned, I think tolerance is the most difficult. As an addict, I didn't want to feel uncomfortable. In this program, I've had to learn how to do things that are hard, how to do things that are uncomfortable. But every time that I was able, with the help of the sponsor and the fellowship, to accomplish something that was hard, it built up my self-esteem, it built up my confidence, and it built up my desire to continue to do things, because I realized that I can achieve something even though it's difficult. I can get through that fourth step. I can do a fifth step. I can make a list of people I've harmed. I can make those amends to people with the love and support of this fellowship. And I can move forward in my life with the least amount of conflict as possible. You know, I say the least amount because there's always going to be times I'm a human being and I'm not going to outgrow that. But I have to learn how to tolerate things that are difficult, whether it means, like, it could be as simple as when the meal is over, I get up from the table, right? I mean, sometimes it's as simple as that. And you might be a person today where you say, like, that's hard. It's hard to put the fork down. Yes, it is. But that's why this program gives me tools. There's 9 tools that I could use that help me to first start off by putting down that food. And then as I continue to work this program and take those difficult required actions, those tools lift me up. And the fellowship lifts me up because I'm not doing this alone. I'm doing this shoulder to shoulder with all of you, everybody that's on the line today, and everybody that's going to listen to this recording afterwards. And little by slowly, my tolerance builds. Even if you're like me, where, you know, I would fail and cry on my way home from school, but I would write in my journal that night that I'm going to do this with the help of my higher power and my fellows. I'm doing this, and I did one day at a time, one word at a time, and for us, maybe for you, one bite at a time, one meal at a time, I can accomplish this. And so what happens when the more I'm able to tolerate, right, the more I'm able to achieve. The more I'm able to achieve something miraculous. Something miraculous. Now, I want to spend a little time talking about kindliness, because I'm going to just put it out there and guess that you might be like me, and perhaps you haven't always been the kindest, not only to other people, but I feel like for as the compulsive overeater, I'm not kind to myself. I am not. My self-talk and my negative thoughts in my head were controlling me. I would say terrible things about myself, things that I wouldn't think about other people. Well, maybe I would. Because you know why I would think these things about other people? Because this was the self-talk that I told myself constantly. You're worthless. You're a piece of garbage. You can't do it. You're a failure. Everybody else gets it. You don't. These are all the terrible things that I used to say to myself. So I'm going to just put a challenge out there for everybody today to try to do one thing today for yourself that's kind. And maybe you're trapped in the house and you don't have a chance to go out and do anything kind for yourself, but there's things that are within your house that you can do that are kind. I remember when I first got abstinent, one of the kindest things I did for myself was cleaning up my area, cleaning up my living space. You know, today, if you came to my house, you'll find a house that's clean and tidy and free from clutter. My sponsor always marvels. She's like, you're the poster child for tidiness and minimal. You know, I live a minimal life, not because I can't afford to have things anymore, but because I choose not to clutter up my space with things that are not serving me. That's just the way I live my life today because of this program. If I don't use it or I don't need it, I don't have it. I get rid of it. Because when I have too much clutter in my life, in my environment, then I have clutter in my mind. And it doesn't allow me to function at my full capacity because I'm always just trying to go up that down. I'm trying to like run up the down escalator just to get out of the clutter. And it's so exhausting that I have there's like nothing left in my tank when I actually have to achieve something. So a loving thing for myself would be like cleaning out my junk drawer, you know, maybe you're home today. We're having a storm here. We're going to be having a nor'easter. You know, maybe I could shut the TV off today for an hour and find just some project that I could declutter or clean in my house so that I could have more clarity in that area. And once I start doing that, I learn that I can declutter the thoughts in my head. Because I want to, like, say something really important here, and you've probably heard me say this before. My thoughts control my feelings, and my feelings control my actions. I'll repeat it because it's important. My thoughts control my feelings, and my feelings control my actions. So when I live in a place that is cluttered with too much stuff, even my thoughts, then I have a feeling of defeatism. And then what happens is that I sink into that depression. So a kind thing for me would be to try to declutter my environment and then declutter my thoughts with those things in my mind that are not serving me. They are not serving me. You know, and I've actually had to let go of a lot of things in recovery that was not serving me. Obviously, food, that's the obvious most important one, but also behaviors that weren't serving me, right? Like sitting in front of screen time or just constantly, you know, oh gosh, there's a part in the Big Book that talks about, hold on a second, the businessman, you know, complaining about the state of the world. You know, I had to give that up. I had to give up the complaint committee. I had to give it up. And I just feel like living a better life. You know, I mentioned before that I thought everybody was lucky and I wasn't lucky, you know. And I recently heard something about luck that really changed my perspective. So what I heard was that luck equals opportunity plus preparedness. Or I could say it the other way, luck equals preparedness plus opportunity. And that's truly what luck is, preparedness plus opportunity. So being in a 12-step recovery program in OA prepares me. That is where I become prepared. By doing this work, by decluttering my life, by decluttering the food, by decluttering the thoughts in my head that don't serve me, you know, the thoughts of resentment, of fear, of bitterness, of shame, all of those thoughts, by decluttering that, by doing that, I'm preparing myself. And what am I preparing myself for? For opportunities. Now, where do the opportunities come? They come from, this is important, they come from my higher power. They come from relationship with my higher power. Those opportunities come. They come. And when I'm prepared and the opportunities come, guess what? There's the luck. There goes the beautiful life. There goes the beautiful life. Just checking on my time. I have a few more minutes. So I want to talk about the kindliness, being kind to myself, and also talk about self-love. You know, I think the most important thing about self-love is letting go of these expectations that I'm supposed to be different than I am. You know, I mean, I might not be in a supermodel body, but I'm in a body that's working today, right? I have a brain that is working today. I have thought processes. I can, I'm functioning. And I have to come to, I think that in order to have love, I need to be in a place of acceptance. And that's not to say that I should just not try to be healthier and do better, but I need to accept myself for where I am today and start doing loving actions towards myself. And those loving actions include working this program. You know, maybe I'm procrastinating. Maybe you're like me. Maybe I'm procrastinating on something because I'm scared to do it, the program. Maybe it's making a phone call to somebody to ask for a sponsor, or maybe it's making an amends that I have to do. You know, the loving thing is to just try to do the next right thing regardless. Like, use the tools of program. If I'm afraid, do a fear inventory. Make an action plan. Use those tools. That's what they're there for, to help me to get over those things so that I can begin to be loving to myself And then once I'm in relationship with myself and I have a connection to myself, it allows me to have that greater connection. It's kind of like all works together in a cycle that's never ending. I then begin to have connection to a higher power. And that connection to higher power allows me to have a connection to others that is patient, kind, tolerant, and loving. It's amazing. I now can be in relation and connection with other people that is patient, tolerant, kindliness, and loving. And it doesn't matter what circumstances are going on outside the world. You know, as an addict, I cannot afford to lead the charge. You know, the big book says, I feel like I haven't put as many big book references in here, but the grouch and the brainstorm are not for us. You know, as an addict, I cannot afford to be angry, resentful, afraid, any of those things. And what's so beautiful is that the program is laid out in the big book. It's prescribed to help me conquer those things so that I don't have to experience it. So that when I come across people in the outside world that have opinions, views, and experiences that are different than mine, I do not have to react with anger and remorse and fear, because therefore I do not step on the toes of my fellows, and they are not caused to retaliate against me, because I am neutral, and I allow everybody to have their own feelings and experiences and their thoughts and their own values, even if they're conflicting with mine. It is none of my business. My only business, like it says in the traditions, I have no opinion on outside issues. I adopt that into my own life, and it may seem like I'm just being naive, but it is not naivety. It is a choice that I am making to not engage in chaos around me. It's like I often will share, like I am autonomous, like in a submarine, not in denial, but with my creator, where I feel I am surrounded by an impervious barrier of this program which has created for me with the help of God, that no matter what happens at the end of the day, I am safe and protected. I am safe and protected. And if that is my fundamental belief, nothing will shake it, regardless of what these circumstances are. And circumstances are temporary. I used to love the third step prayer because it said, take away my difficulties. And that's all I wanted when I came in here. I wanted my difficulties to be taken away because I couldn't tolerate them. But it didn't matter. That is not what the essence of the third step prayer means. If you read on, it says, so that by victory over them, I can bear witness to those I would help of my creator's love. Of my creator's love. Let me read it exactly. I'm so fired up, I can't think of it exactly right now. And I want to tell you that in my morning meditation this morning, I actually cried a little bit with my creator, not because I was scared, but because I'm so in awe of what this program is and what it does for people's lives that it actually brings tears to my eyes. And I know I have to close, but I want to tell you this, that I work vigorously with others. And the most beautiful thing in my life is getting to see other people that I work with have these transformations in their life and rise above their problems. Rise above. It doesn't mean that the problems are not there. It means that because we continue to do this work with sustained momentum, helping ourselves to push away those negative thoughts and to be patient, tolerant, kind, and loving to ourselves, we rise above these problems and our life becomes different. Our life is transformed into a recovered state of love and beauty. And honestly, if I seem like I'm really passionate, I am, because I am in love with my life. I'm going away next week. I have a boyfriend that's taking me away for my birthday on vacation. I can't believe that this is the actual life I live. But, you know, things are just so good in my life. I'm afraid to even share with people because it comes off as bragging, but that's what this program does. If I continue to do the next right thing, just like that little snail when I'm in the kayak, little by slowly, these beautiful patterns emerge and the snail goes someplace. Stay with me today. You're worth it. If you're afraid, take that next step. Use those tools. Lean on the support. Be in connection with yourself so that you can be in connection with a higher power and others. Join us. Give of what you see freely and join us. And enjoy this beautiful life. Fall in love with your life. I'm going to leave you with a poem that I have that's not a program poem. It's an outside poem. But if you're interested in the author or anybody, you can give me a call after this. I'll tell you who it's from. It's called My Autobiography and 5 Short Chapters. Chapter 1, I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter 2, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I still don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. It isn't my fault. It takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3, I walk down the same street. There's a hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's habit. It's my fault. I know where I am. I get out immediately. Chapter 4, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5, I walk down a different street. Thank you so much, everybody. I hope I said something that resonates with you. Please, I'm so happy you're here. Don't give up until the miracle happens. Miracles do happen, and you too can fall in love with your life, and I am in love with all of you. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Toni Ann from New Jersey. Larry, I pass.
Thanks so much, Toni Ann. So appreciative of your authentic, very vulnerable and sincere presentation this morning. Very helpful, very helpful. So now we're going to go ahead and transition to a Q&A phase of our presentation this morning, our program this morning. And so if you have a question for Toni Ann, please hang on for one moment. Let me first give you the share ID for the presentation this morning. That number is 23,229. That's 23229. And also, stick around until the end of the recorded portion. That's the time that we will get Toni Ann's contact information. So stick around for that. And now let's transition to Q&A. If you have a question, questions only, please. Press star 1 to unmute your phone and give me your name. And let's line up with questions for Toni Ann.
Lori G.
Lori?
Justine.
Aliyah A.
Okay, I got Lori, Justine, Aliyah.
Aliyah A.
Pat E from UK.
Was that Pat?
Karen K Z.
Oh, that was Claire. Claire and then Karen. Anybody else? No. Lori, Justine, Aliyah, Claire, and Karen. Anybody else? Okay. We'll go ahead and start with this list here, and then we'll circle back if we have time. So the first question, we'll start with Lori, followed by Justine. Lori, good morning to you. Press star 1, Lori.
Okay, I'll try again. This is Lori.
There you are.
thank you both. Thank you, Larry, for your service. Thank you, Toni, so much for your beautiful share. I have never been able to listen to a live meeting on Sunday, and I've never been able to ask a question. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't actually have a question. I just wanted to say thank you so much. That was so good. And that's it.
Well, thank you, Lori. That was good.
Thanks,
Mark. Thank you. Happy that you're here and happy that you're able to hear live.
And happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. Okay, next up we have Justine, followed by Aliyah. Justine, good morning. Justine, star 1.
Hi. Oh, I'm here. Good morning. This is Justine J. Thank you so much for your share. I was wondering if you always weighed and measured, or what if you started out weighing and measuring from the beginning or if that evolved in some way, just how that panned out.
Thank you for the question. Yes, I did start out weighing and measuring from the beginning because as a bulimic and a compulsive overeater, one of my problems was eating bulk. So what happens is I would eat in bulk. I ate more than my portion, my allotted portion. And then when I became too full, then that would trigger the feeling of, oh my God, I can't be full like this. I can't keep this food in my body. And so in order to, for my own self, and I'm not saying that this is for everybody else, and I think that weighing and measuring depends upon where a person is in their program, where they are. You know, I have to weigh and measure because if I eat over my prescribed amount, that feeling of fullness is a trigger for me. We all have different triggers, okay? Some people like a feeling of emptiness. Some people like a feeling of fullness, you know. Some people don't like a feeling of fullness. So that, because that is a bulimic, is a trigger for me, it is important that I eat a prescribed amount of food that is neither, that I am satiated, that I am neither hungry nor too full. Today, you know, has it evolved a little bit? After 25 years, like, I still use my scale. You know, I do use my scale for certain food items. Other food items, like if I'm going to eat like a one small apple or something, I don't put it on the scale. I would commit to having the one small apple. So certain things, or, you know, like two eggs, maybe, you know, I don't weigh out 4 ounces of eggs. I commit to having the whole thing. So, and when I go out, some people bring their scale. I don't bring my scale out anymore. I did at several times in the beginning when I was first on my losing food plan, I did. And I think that really it's a personal choice that I would work out with my sponsor depending upon what my particular goals are and what my circumstances are. You know, what's so beautiful about this program is that I can make adjustments to my daily disciplines based on what my goals are. And I think that really, there is no one-size-fits-all answer for everybody. I think that depends on each person's individual needs. But the most important thing, the weighing and measuring, was to teach me honesty. Each discipline that I practice teaches me a different principle in this program. And the principle of honesty was something that I struggled with. And so the weighing and measuring was a way to help me to learn to be honest and to have that integrity, to say what I'm doing and to do what I say. And that particular skill has been able to transfer into other things in my life where I now live a life of integrity. So I will attribute that in the beginning, because I came in here undisciplined, to putting my food at the very beginning, if you're starting, on the scale. Thank you for the question, Lauren. Justine, thank you.
Okay, next up we have Aaliyah, followed by Claire. Aaliyah, good morning to you.
Good morning, may I be heard?
Yes. You can, you bet.
Thank you. So, wow, thank you so much for that share. I mean, that's why I love Sunday mornings, because it's amazing. It's a two-part question. The first one is, you mentioned negative thoughts. So just to understand a bit the process on how you were dealing with these negative thoughts in the program. And the second part is the denial. You mentioned we cannot progress. So what if you have someone who is stuck in denial and have a fear or unwillingness to look at the truth because of the consequences? How your feedback on that? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Well, negative thoughts, I can do another whole special edition on negative thoughts, because they're toxic. Negative thoughts is like toxins in my brain. My thoughts control my feelings. So when I constantly play the negative channel, you know, sometimes I think of my brain as like, it's like programming, okay? If you think of your brain let me just use the example of television programming, all right? My brain is like a television programming. And whatever I subscribe to is my reality. And so if I'm subscribing to all this negative stuff, all right, and let me just use, maybe you can understand if I put it in this terms, you know, we're all like a social media society today. So social media creates an algorithm based on what I'm searching for. and based on who I'm friends with. And so that algorithm, if it's if I'm searching a negative, if I'm around people and they're talking about like negative stuff and negative things, then that's what I'm going to start to see on my feed. It's like an algorithm, you know, like when a company is doing advertising, they're trying to target a certain group. They're looking for keywords. And if you have those keywords, you're going to start getting those targeted messages. Okay. The keywords that I'm putting in my brain are giving my brain targeted messages. When I put the keywords of negativity into my brain, like I can't, it's too much, I won't make it, they're not the same as me. And it's kind of like when I am identifying out or identifying negatively, then that perpetuates. And that message, like, you know, in one of the big book, one of the chapters in the big book, it talks about my magic magnifying mind. Whatever I put the magnifying glass over is going to get bigger. So if I choose to constantly be in negative thoughts, then that negativity in my life is going to full blown eventually into a type of, I believe, a depression. But just like I can choose to change the network on my television, I have the ability to change my own thoughts, to stop feeding myself the negativity. So, I mean, if you look at my algorithm on my social, I do listen to watch social media. It's now my daughter's getting married, so it's all wedding stuff. I look at stuff with babies and animals and silly things, you know, comedy, but silly things. That's what I choose to fill myself up with. I choose to fill myself up with happiness. And I find happiness in simple things. Like, you know, happiness to me today is, you know, for my fruit today, I'm going to eat a plum. I just shined it up. I shined up my plum. You know how a plum, it looks like it's got that little film on it. And it's such a beautiful, shiny color today. And I find just a tiny bit of joy that I'm going to eat that beautiful, shiny purple plum. It doesn't have to be like what I'm trying to tell you is if you look for joy in everyday living, you're going to be a happier person. Those negative thoughts diminish. The key with the negative thoughts is to be able to identify those negative thoughts that I'm having and identify those negative thoughts through working the program by doing a self-appraisal in steps 10 throughout the day, and if I miss it in step 10 throughout the day, I have a catch-all at night by doing a step 11. And then in the morning, I do a meditation or reflection on how I'm going to plan my day. And it says in the big book that I be divorced from self-pity and from negative thinking. I specifically can ask for that from my creator. And when I start to put that on my radar and I start to recognize it, it's just like when I was trying to pass those speed tests in school, I have to take a look at what the mistakes are that I'm making. A lot of the times in my life, the mistakes is just I take a negative viewpoint instead of a positive one. Just because something isn't the way that I want it to be, it doesn't mean that it has to be negative. You know, it's in step two, we're asked to open up our mind and just come to believe that there's a possibility that things could be different than how I see them. And if I'm constantly seeing things through a negative filter, then everything I see will be negative. But that's not the truth about life, that life isn't all just negative. There's happiness and there's beauty everywhere around us if we're willing to put down that negative filter and just open our eyes and see. For me, it's a bird just flew across my windows. It's so funny. It's the sound of the birds chirping. It's the sound of the wind blowing in the leaves. You know, somebody, the car going down the street, somebody's doing something, taking an action. All those things are little tiny things that I find joy in. And, you know, in relationship with others in my family. Now, giving people the benefit of the doubt, and I didn't say this word, and I'm glad I can say it now. Extending grace to myself and to others. Extending graciousness to myself and to others. Change the channel in your brain. You don't have to listen to the negativity. You know, if there's something that I find I can't tolerate, then that's something that I have to learn that I must abstain from. Just like foods that I can't tolerate, I have to abstain. But there's also behaviors that I do myself that I'm not tolerating that I have to abstain from. And sometimes that means changing up my environment. changing up what I'm looking at, changing up what I'm ingesting both in my body and in my mind. And I want to talk a little bit about the denial part. You know, I talked about what relationship is, right? The definition of relationship, I had shared that before. It's the way in two or more the way in which two or more concepts, objects, or people are connected. A relationship is the state of being connected. So when I'm in denial, it means I am not connected to something that's going on inside me. But being in denial does not excuse the circumstance. The circumstance, whether I am in denial or I am facing it, it still remains. And it will continue to remain until I take sustained right actions with momentum towards the solution. So denial does not fix anything. It only serves me to kick the can down the road. And that reminds me of the definition of worry, which is, I often say, is like a rocking chair. Worry is like a rocking chair. It gets me, it's something to do, but it gets me nowhere. It gives me something to do, but it gets me nowhere. If I want to get somewhere, I have to tolerate the uncomfortable feeling of looking at the truth of something. And then little by slowly, and I might not be able to do it by myself. That's why we have sponsors in this program, to help us work through these steps, to work through these complex issues that we're dealing with in our life. You know, the denial might be a financial thing. It might be a relationship thing. It might be a health thing. It might be my living situation, whatever it is. But there has to be some right action that you can take today, however small, like the snail, a little tiny right action towards doing the right thing with support and sustained momentum. You are going to go somewhere. Those problems are going to be worked out. Nothing is forever. We can do it. You can do whatever it is that you need to do with help and with action and with love and tolerance and kindness to yourself. Listen, we came in here because we all made mistakes, all right? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we did. It's what we're doing today that is going to define who we are. So I said that our thoughts control our actions. Let me back up. Our thoughts control our feelings control our actions, and our actions, this is the important part, our actions control the results that we get in our life. This program teaches us how to take those next right actions for ourselves, whatever they look like, one day at a time. And that's all we got to do is 24 hours. Just for today, I can do one thing that is beneficial to myself, and to try to have that connection with myself, with my creator, and with others. Thank you so much, Alea, for that question.
Okay, we have a couple more questions here. Next up, Claire, followed by Karen. Claire, come on in. Claire, star one. Okay, maybe we lost Claire. Karen, do you have a question?
Yes, this is Karen Casey in Missouri. Tony Ann, you just inspired me and lifted me. I think you changed the whole planet. So thank you. I have a question. You mentioned four inventories, and I've always wondered about this because the three that I know of are the resentment and the fear and the sex. And I always get confused when we get to step eight and they say, well, you have that list of people you've harmed from step four. And I think there should be a sheet about how I've harmed people, not just, and I don't know where people are getting that. So if you could clarify that, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. That's a great question. I'm glad to give the clarity. So I break down my fourth step into four parts, but specifically I break down the sex harm into two parts. So there's harms that are excluding sex, and then there's sex harms. So for example, you know, I had stolen food from fast food places when I was younger, and I would, you know, steal this food and go home and go on a binge. So that is not a sex harm, but obviously that is a harm. You know, I have done harms to people that did not include sex, or even if you use the word sex in a very basic primitive to mean intimacy, so that perhaps not necessarily sex itself, like that type of an intimate relationship, but just relationships with people in my close immediate family. Okay, so that is different than a sexual relationship with somebody. That's just a familiar relationship. But if I were to use that example, then that would be also a harm that did not include sex. So, you know, maybe to my children, to those other people around me that weren't necessarily just sexual in nature. So I do divide that up.
Okay, that's helpful because a lot of people don't have sex harms, but they do have harms that they did to other people. So potentially there could be another sheet that would be
correct.
Just for if they have a sex one, then they could also do a harms. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad you
mentioned.
If you
want to contact me afterwards, I do have sheets that are separated. I do have forms for each one of those four inventories. I'd be happy to forward it to you so you can take a look at it further, okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the question. Okay.
Thanks so much, Karen. Okay, I'm just going to try one more time. Maybe I misheard, but I thought I heard Claire. So I'll give an opportunity to start one, Claire, if indeed I heard you. Okay. Well, we have time perhaps for maybe one or two more questions if they're out there.
Maureen.
Star one, who has a question?
Maureen
H. Mm-hmm. Okay, Maureen. Let's go with that and see where we're.
Elaine F.
Was it Krista? I'm sorry, Elaine. Krista? Did I hear that right?
Yes, Krista F.
Okay. We're going to get Tony Ann's contact information after. You can reach out to her directly. Maureen, what question do you have?
Yes, thank you. The question I have is about negative talk to ourselves. What do you do when somebody else is talking negative about me and spreading it throughout the workplace? And how would I set a healthy boundary around that without arguing
or retaliating?
You said
somebody else is I'm sorry, I had to switch
yeah.
my earpod. You said somebody is talking negatively about others, like gossiping or talking about you?
Yeah, like if they're spreading rumors around the office about me, how do I deal with that person without arguing or retaliating? What kind of healthy boundaries can I set with the other person?
When I have to set a boundary like that, I address the person privately and directly and just let them know that it's hurtful to me. You know, and sometimes what I try to do is just try to remember that hurt people hurt people. I'll say it again. Hurt people hurt people. Oftentimes, if somebody is talking negatively about me, it's a reflection of some type of pain that they're in for themselves for whatever reason. You know, remember that we live in a world where we're dealing with the sick and suffering. So I have to set boundaries and just let them know that, you're making me feel uncomfortable, and then try to almost like when I make an amends letter, like, is there something going on with you? Or is there something going on between us that we need to talk about? You know, but I do set healthy boundaries. But then if I'm dealing with a person, you know, because there are people and there have been people in my life that were triggering, that were toxic people that were triggering to me. And it becomes a matter of tolerance. When I get to a place where I cannot tolerate where I am and it's affecting the it's affecting my sobriety, it's affecting my abstinence, it's affecting my recovery, then that then becomes a place where I cannot be. And so, you know, I mean, I'm no expert on employment or anything, but then if I can't get anywhere with the person, I would have to run it up the flagpole or understand that perhaps this isn't the place where it's healthy for me. And sometimes in my life, it's required making big changes. It's required making big changes, you know. But also sometimes it also requires an honest self-appraisal of myself. You know, is there a reason why I am portraying victim why others are making me a victim. Am I not portraying, you know, is there something that I'm doing that I am portraying that? And that usually will come out for me in step 11, in step 10, and step 11. But, you know, sometimes the answer is not obvious for me in situations that I'm in, and I have to do the work again and again in order to be neutral with it. Sometimes, like, I've had cases, like, I've shared this on other special editions, when my son went into the military, when he told me he was going to join the military, I was so frightened. I mean, I was gripped by fear. And I literally had to do a fear inventory, the same fear inventory, every single day for at least 30 days in a row, every day. And come up with the same ideal every day before I was allowing it to really seep into my brain to take that action. And sometimes that's what's required. Just like the, you know, and again, I go back to the snail, little by slowly, you know, keep doing the work. You know, only, you know, I can't tell you what to do on employment issues, but I can tell you that I can continue to work my program, doing the 10 steps, looking at the resentment, looking at what my part is, because no matter at the end of the day, I have no ability to change another person. The only person I can change is me. And one of my favorite sayings, I swear to God, I tell people that someday at my memorial service, somebody better get up and say, you can't carpet the world, but you can wear slippers. I hope that helps.
Thanks, Maureen.
Thank
okay,
you.
For our last question. Yeah, for our last question from Krista. Krista, good morning. Star one, Krista.
Oh, hey, can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you. Hey, thank you so much, Tony. That was incredible. Seriously. My question is, could you talk a little bit more about your hospitalization period? I know that you, like at the beginning, went to bed early, right after dinner. Did you have to suspend any commitments in your life outside of program? How did you navigate that in the first weeks or months of abstinence? Thanks.
Thank you for asking that question. Yes. So for the beginner, yes. I mean, I did have to make a lot of things differently. First of all, you know, there a lot because of my bulimia, my eating, you know, I didn't want a lot of people in my life to know what I was doing in the beginning until I didn't feel on secure ground. Maybe you're out there right now and you're curious about this program, but you don't want to blast it like from the rooftops and tell everybody what you're doing. So my family, my mother and like my immediate family, my neighbors, people close to me in my life, people didn't know what I was doing. I protected that for myself. I protected my anonymity very tightly in the beginning because I didn't want other people's opinions to influence my experience of what I was doing. So I protected that a lot. And people would like, you know, my neighbors would ask me these questions like, you know, I see these people picking you up like, you know, twice a week. I see all this, you know, this car come with all these people picking you up. Where are you going? And I would say, well, you know, I'm going out to save the world. You know, and I would say something like ridiculous. I would make up some ridiculous answer and laugh about it. And then I would like leave it at that because I didn't want to like tell everybody what I was doing. But yes, there were certain places where I couldn't go. There were triggers to me. You know, there were certain people that I really wasn't able to be around because they were triggers to me. You know, that tolerance is really important. When there's something that I have a low tolerance to, until I'm able to build up my tolerance. And being in program and recovery helps us to build our tolerance to things. So today, you know, I can walk into an ice cream parlor. I can go into a bakery. I can order, you know, I'm ordering the cake for my daughter's engagement party. Like, well, I could do all those things. Without, it doesn't matter. You know, I can watch other people eat food that I don't eat. I can go into a bar and have a glass of seltzer. Like I can do those things today. But in the beginning I couldn't. And so in the beginning I didn't go to those places. You know, if the kids wanted to have the ice cream and stuff, you know, their father would take them. And I would go do something else, go for a walk or make phone calls during that time. And that's what I had to do to get, you know, like I said, get in the shower, go to sleep early. I had to limit my conversations with people that used to partake in gossiping with me. I had to limit my exposure to negativity. I had to limit my exposure to the news. When I came in, it was like right a year, I think I was in, was like when 9/11 hit. And I was petrified and I couldn't tolerate it. It was affecting my recovery. And so I literally was not able to watch the news. And still to this day, I do not watch the news. My mom used to get really mad at me, and she's like, what if something happens, you won't know? And I go, Mom, if something happens, I'm sure you'll contact me. I'm not worried about it. You know, I still have the same argument with people today. I'm like, I'm not worried about it. I can tolerate a lot of things today that I couldn't tolerate. And I think protecting myself in the beginning until little by slowly, I built up my tolerance. And that's how it does happen. And it does happen, you know, but in the beginning, yes, I have to set boundaries. I have to set boundaries with myself, and I have to set boundaries with others. And like I said, you know, the best teacher of that was starting out by following through on my word. You know, my commitment to my sponsor, following through on that commitment with my sponsor with integrity. And that started to build up my tolerance or my strength for being able to set my own boundaries with others. And of course, as a sponsor, as a healthy sponsor today, I have boundaries with my sponsees and with those people, other people in my life, including other relationships in my life as well. Thank you very much for that question.
Yeah, thank you, Krista. And as we're wrapping up here, Tony, and thank you so much. It was a real pleasure hearing you this morning. We're so appreciative. We have tremendous gratitude for you this morning. So
right back at you, Larry.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'll give the share ID again. That number is 23,229 for this presentation. 23229. We're going to close from the reading from the big book on page 164, and I'll go ahead and do that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.